A Scandinavian Airlines flight is taking off out of Linate Airport in Milan when they get rocked. What caused this flight to crash and what issues got uncovered because of it?
Welcome back to the Hard Landings Podcast, everybody. I'm Nick.
I'm Miranda.
And I'm Christy.
And we're feeling particularly spicy this evening.
Yes.
You didn't hear anything that came before this, but...
No, we're...
Christy is trying to trigger a whole generation of people.
By mixing up slogans and brands.
It's fun. In other news...
There's a lot of stuff going on right now, so...
Yeah, sorry, don't mind me.
Nick and I are officially now la-married.
Yes.
Which you already in Leno, because we told you the last week.
But we're actually here.
We're actually here and married.
So, yes. Cheers.
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 Here. Ready. We'll do the clink. Ready.
You have to do it in front of the microphone.
Do your microphone.
There we go. The clink.
Other than that, we have quite a few new patrons.
Yes,
thanks,
we do.
Thanks for the wedding gift.
So Christy's going to look all those up because there's probably several new free patrons too. But
yes, some of that is probably because some of you found us through the means of the Max crashes. Because we might have covered those at length.
A little bit.
Maybe.
Did you read these off last time? When was the last time we recorded?
I don't remember if I thanked anyone.
We've been recording on time for week. We recorded on time 2 weeks in a row.
Okay, we're gonna just start with Morgan. I'm just picking a name. So right. Thank you to Morgan, Tara, Thomas, Cheyenne. Wow, that is a way to spell your name. Esther and Julio.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I'm not gonna say who's free and who's not. That's your business.
Also, like, if we already thanked you, thank you again. Because I don't remember. I don't remember doing the ones with Brendan and Paige, but it doesn't mean I didn't.
Yeah.
It just means I don't remember.
Yeah.
So if I already thanked you, thank you again.
Right.
I'm sorry that I'm a freaking disaster.
We're sorry.
Welcome to the Disaster Podcast,
right,
where we are also disasters.
Yes, we are. This is the first time that all three of us are here and recording since we've released both Max episodes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to say, oh my god.
No, because we did
the short
South African Airways.
It hadn't come out yet.
Ethiopian hadn't come out yet.
Yes, it did.
No, it didn't.
South African Airways came out after Ethiopian.
Yes, but when we recorded South African, Ethiopian wasn't out yet.
Yeah.
I guess.
So this is me saying, oh my god, sorry. but also that episode probably had the most rapid amount of listens.
Engagement
we've ever had. Because it was over 3 hours long.
I just like everyone was like, why is it 3 hours long? And I was like,
and then there were people complaining about things we didn't cover. I'm like, did you miss the whole 3 hour part? It meant it took 4 hours for us to record.
Oh, right.
Over four. It was over four.
It was.
Coming from the person who edited that episode, yes. It was over four.
It was over four. To be fair, the other one, which by comparison doesn't seem that long because it was under 2 hours, was 3 hours worth of recording.
Yeah.
I cut a lot out of that episode because Ethiopian was next and there was a lot of things for context.
Listen, so. Linda's, it was a lot.
It was a lot.
Okay.
But
I know we skipped some things. Let it be.
Yes. We already spent 5 hours discussing it.
Put it in the comments
for
so
you to
can
listen.
Do their own research.
For you to listen to. We put a lot of thoughts out there. I know that there's a lot more to talk about, even in regard to the reports, but we cannot. We just cannot. We could not. We did not have time based on everything we talked about.
We already broke it up into 2 days, people.
Yeah.
We couldn't do longer than that.
Both episodes were recorded in 2 days. To put it in
and
to perspective.
Ethiopian, both days were over 2 hours long.
Yes.
It was so long.
Yes.
Anyway.
Anyways.
And on top of that, like last week, Christy and Nick weren't here, right? So
yeah.
Everyone was like, you haven't heard that episode yet, but I'm sure everyone's like, what the f-?
Yeah.
They're back.
Hi.
Everything's
Hello.
Not okay, but coming back to slight normalcy.
Yes.
And we're not, like I said before, we're not going to talk about what happened. None of your business. Okay.
None of your business.
It was a family emergency.
Yes.
So, but they're back.
We're back. We're here. No, we're
no,
married.
No need to freak out.
No, we're married.
I need to file all the stupid name change documents.
Yes, you need to do that rapidly because you need to have that passport before November.
I need to have it before July, actually, because we're supposed to go to Vancouver for my birthday.
Yes, only if we can actually make that happen. Yes.
Okay, so do all the normal stuff. Check out the Patreon, check out the merch page. Share us to everybody you know and love.
That's right.
Woo.
Woo. So what are we covering today, Nick?
Today. How do I even put this?
Today we are covering the Linate
Airport disaster. Yes.
Thank you.
Linate Airport disaster.
Thank you to Taisha, JJ, Gabriel, and Maria for recommending this.
Yeah.
So many people.
So many people. Thank you for recommending it. It is a sizable one. And to be fair, I feel very ill prepared this time. And I spent like 5 hours on this one.
Jesus.
And I just feel like, first of all, the report structure was bad. The history of flight was bad. It was just bad. It's so disorganized.
Also, you will get deja vu to like 200 episodes ago.
Is it deja vu if I forgot what happened in that
episode? You did not forget what happened in that episode.
Okay, solid, thanks.
You did not forget what happened.
Decisively, okay. That probably means it's like Uberlingen or something, right?
That
means it's Uberlingen.
It's not Uberlingen.
It's not. So this one, just bear with me. It's a mess. I don't hide much, especially because you'll know what's happening right away when we'll get there.
When stuff starts to hit the fan?
Or buildings.
Or both.
We'll buildings with fans?
So,
probably. I would hope so. Otherwise, that'd be a really miserable place to work.
Yeah.
Continue.
Turns out it was a miserable place to work.
Turns out.
I know we already said this is the Linate Airport disaster. However, we're also talking about specifically Scandinavian Airlines Flight 686. This accident occurred on October 8th of 2001.
Did you not hear about it? That might be because something happened a month before.
Weird. Yeah, this got a little overshadowed by multiple things.
A little?
Yes.
Very overshadowed?
Yes. This was a McDonnell Douglas MD-87 with the registration Sierra Echo Delta Mike Alpha, which, okay, the MD-87 is really unique. It was the rarest and is still the rarest variant of the DC-9 family, being all the way to the 717, which is still flying about today, as well as, of course, like the MD-80s, the MD-90s. The MD-80 family in and of itself had more variants than the DC-9. Not necessarily. The DC-9, I shouldn't say that, because the DC-9 had a lot of variants, but the MD-80 family had a lot of variants. The MD-80, 81, 82, 83, 85, 87... So,
good Lord.
Yeah, there was a lot. And the 87 is the rarest of the entire DC-9 family. There was only a couple of airlines that bought in on it. And
wonder who.
American had a handful. But this being rare because it was an MD-80 in that it still had the cigar engines, JT-8Ds. Actually, it was not the JT-8D. I don't remember. They is a different engine by this point, but it had the MD-80 style engines.
It had the JT-8D.
Did it have the... Okay, so it had a variant of the JT-8D.
The JT-8D 217 Charlie.
That's the one. The 217 Charlie. So it still had the cigars on the side, which by the time we got to the MD-90, they were putting different engines on it entirely. But...
I don't have the whole list of who had them, but the first delivery was to Austrian Airlines, and the last delivery was to Scandinavian Airlines.
Yes, so Scandinavian, Austrian, American, at least. I know that. The MD-87 was the shortest variant of the MD-80 family. It's about the same length as a 717, but with the cigar engines instead of the 717 engines.
With an overall length of 130 feet and 5 inches.
Yes. So it was short.
It was 17 feet shorter than the other MD-80s.
Yep. All the other ones were basically the same. It was just a variance in, like, fuel tanks and range and weight, things like that.
And blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Provides a typical mixed class seating for 114 passengers or 130 in all economy layout. 5 abreast, 31 inches, and 32 inches in seat pitch.
The MD-87 was, yes, particularly relatively rare. This flight was to be from Milan Linate to Copenhagen. Makes sense. SAS being Scandinavian.
Scandinavian.
It serves the whole Scandinavian region and is the flag carrier for all of those countries.
Kind of. Finnair, actually.
Oh, whatever.
Is more Finland's. But the captain for this flight was Joachim Gustafsson, who was 36 years old.
Sounds Scandinavian.
Yes. He was 36 years old, had about 5,800 hours total, of which about 230 were on the MD-87. So not very many on the MD-87 in total, but 5,800 hours total. The first officer was Anders Hillander, who was also 36 years old.
Huh. Okay.
And had about 4,300 hours total, so less total, but 2,000, about 2,000 total on the MD-87, so significantly more on the MD-87. This flight was to have 104 passengers, which joined the six crew in boarding the flight. This being first thing in the morning, the airplane was originating in Milan, so it had stayed overnight, so had the crew. The flight was scheduled to depart Milan at 7:35 a.m. local time, bound for Copenhagen. However, 7:41 a.m. and 39 seconds, the aircraft was parked on the north apron when the flight crew contacted the Linate ground controller to request engine start clearance.
May we start up, Captain?
Yes, so we're already late. The ground controller cleared the flight for engine start and advised that the slot time for takeoff of the flight was to be 8:16 a.m. local time, which was actually quite a while from when they were asking to start engines. It was about, let's see here, it was over a half an hour.
Yeah, that's really
long time. There was a lot of other happenings at the airport at this time. There was a lot of other airplanes moving, landing, taking off, and it's not very big. So Linate specifically, it still operates as a commercial airport, by the way, but it is one of three. Linate is the closest to Milan. There's Bergamo, which is not Milan at all. But
does Ryanair fly there?
That's Ryanair. But that's Ryanair shtick, so it's Milan-Bergamo Airport, even though it's in Bergamo, and it's an hour from Milan. But
yeah, that's where Ryanair's like, yeah, you're flying to Milan, but it's not Milan.
But that's Ryanair's thing where they're like, hey, let's go to Milan, and then they
and
don't.
And then the other one I have written down.
Malpensa, which that is one. The biggest one in Milan, and it serves the international destinations and everything. It's still the biggest one.
You're an international destination.
No, but that would be fun.
Would it, though?
More fun than being here sometimes. So this one is the closest to the city. It is a significantly smaller airport than the other two this day and age. And it serves a lot of GA traffic as well as some smaller flights, commercial flights, this being obviously one of them. But it's still significantly smaller than the other airports. So having a lot of operations means there's a pretty cramped airport at times. 7:54 a.m. and 23 seconds, after completing their pre-flight preparations and some checklists, the crew requested clearance to taxi to the runway. The controller instructed the flight to taxi to runway 36, specifically the runway 36 ILS CAT 3 hold position, as well as the air traffic controller requested that they inform him when they were entering the main taxiway. We'll talk about that later on.
Why did they have to go to the CAT 3 holding spot?
Yes, so
I was just going to ask that question.
Yes, and these exist actually all around the world at most airports that have ILS. But if there's a taxiway immediately adjacent to a runway with a Category 3 ILS, as well as some Category 2 and 1, because of the way the equipment is set up around the runway, there is a hold position that is a little further back from the end of the runway so that the aircraft stops there and any aircraft that's using the Category 3 inbound approach, ILS, doesn't have any interference. There's no aircraft blocking the signal, basically. Because if somebody's right up close, then they could block the signal if they go past that taxi point.
So is anyone using the Category 3 ILS right now?
Yes.
Oh, no.
Yes, they are.
There's the rub.
So.
Okay, but wait, explain that to me again.
What does Category 3 mean?
Category 3 means that visibility is next to nothing.
It's foggy.
Very, very, very minimal visibility because it's foggy.
You got deja vu yet?
Wait, hold on.
So.
Hold on.
The ILS hold point is where they've been told to taxi to clarify.
That's where they need to be to not block the ILS, right?
To not block the ILS signal from the inbound aircraft.
Got it.
If they go beyond that, they could potentially block the signal. The hold point between the hold short for the entrance to the runway and the hold point for the ILS are usually not terribly far apart, but...
there's some space.
There's some space because...
there's some give just in case someone's stupid enough to go past that point.
Yeah, yeah. It's usually maybe like 3 to 4 aircraft lengths in difference.
Okay.
So it's some distance. It's nothing crazy, though.
Okay.
But just that way, there's no signal block for these other aircraft.
My point with the leading questions is it's foggy. Foggy.
It is quite foggy.
Is there a way to... wait, when did this happen?
2001.
Okay. Is there a way that they can tell where the point is without seeing it? unless they talk with the controller?
There.
Stick a needle in it.
Are. But, yes, put a pin in that.
Because I can see. I can visualize.
So the visualization you're having in your head is misleading.
Okay.
It is.
You are not currently on the right track.
Okay.
Don't worry.
Because my
brain, get there.
My brain is going inbound aircraft,
right?
Other aircraft,
right?
Boomies?
No, not that one.
No, you're on to something, but there's some caveats here. Put a pin in that
needle. She's cross stitching.
Yes, a needle. You have asked a pertinent question though. Is there something that they can see?
Yeah.
I
don't know. If it's really foggy and it's really hard to see, is there a particular way they know for sure that they're in the spot that they're supposed to be in?
Typically, ILS hold points are marked just like a hold short for a runway. They have a big red marking on the ground that says ILS hold short, a big yellow line all the way across, and a yellow dotted line all the way across.
And they're supposed to be yellow and green alternating lights to indicate you're in the ILS area.
Right. We'll talk about all that later on. But yes, put a needle in that too. So.
Okay.
Can you stop predicting things before he's even done telling a story?
However, there's still a lot to cover because you don't worry, you're not even on the right track really at all yet.
Okay.
It's fine.
Just saying. It's not giving me the warm fuzzy feelings.
There's no warm and fuzzies here. There's no warm and fuzzies here.
There's no warm fuzzy feelings.
We've already gone through a few things that you didn't catch yet that are also very pertinently bad.
Also because I'm not fully paying attention.
That's okay. But there's some pertinent things. Because I don't want you to predict everything yet. And get too mad yet. Because
I'm sure there are people screaming at their dashboard right now.
You have
like, driving.
Listen, why can't Linda figure it out? I don't know, Linda's...
Because there's another very key thing that happened that was very sus. And we'll talk about that later
on. Is it the amount of time between the startup and them actually...
No, that has nothing to do with it, actually. But...
because that seemed pretty normal to me.
Principale.
Yeah, there's a whole thing going on here we'll talk about in a minute.
Okay.
So, anyways... all of that said, there is no warm and fuzzy happening at all with this entire thing.
It's like a setup for a disaster.
Not one thing is
Well, called the Linate Airport disaster.
Yes.
Ergo, I made some inferences, but you know.
Yes. 7:59 a.m. and 41 seconds. The ground controller instructed the flight, quote, passing the fire station, call tower 18.1, bye, end quote. That was the instruction. So... that was him saying to the flight.
But they also are intermingling a little bit of Italian.
Yes.
So, like, the crew, when they had initially called ground control,
yes,
they said buongiorno.
Yes, they are.
I expect it's they probably said ciao.
Yes, probably. Absolutely. They don't clarify any of that. They wrote it all out in English in the history of flight.
Yes, because most people don't know Italian.
Which is true, but also they were trying to just clarify what is being said. And that's it.
So they were telling them, you go by the...
they're telling them that you are going by the fire station right
currently,
now.
Currently.
Contact the tower controller now.
That foggy, they can't see the fire station?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. Visibility is 400 meters or less.
It is 200 meters, in case you're wondering.
I said or less.
Yes. So, the tower is telling... the flight to contact the tower controller now. This is the ground controller telling the flight to contact tower controller on 118.1.
Okay.
The flight crew responded, Scandinavian 686, goodbye. That's it.
Okay.
8:01 a.m. and 24 seconds, the flight contacted the tower controller, which I might add is over a minute later. It's almost a minute and a half later.
Oh, I don't like that.
Yeah. Took a minute and a half for them to go from one frequency to the other.
And if they can't see anything,
have those pre-programmed. You just switch.
Yeah, there's just a little button. You just go click, and then you contact the other one.
So what is the other person doing?
I don't know.
Does it make you feel better that this isn't the problem flight? Yeah.
Does it make you feel better that the thing that I just brought up has nothing to do with the accident? So.
No, it doesn't. It really, really doesn't.
So, anyways, 8:09 a.m. and 28 seconds, which is a whole 8 minutes later, the tower controller cleared the flight for takeoff on runway 36. The flight crew acknowledged and reported rolling for takeoff, as they had actually been requested by the air traffic controller. The air traffic controller instructed, cleared for takeoff, wind such and such and such, report rolling, and then ident after takeoff. And that is a key thing, the ident after takeoff. So ident is a button you press on your transponder that makes your little ping on the radar flash for the air traffic controller and say, this is who you wanted to see or who you're talking to. The air traffic controller asked them to ident after taking off. That's to show up on their radar, right? So.
I don't really like that either.
No.
There's a reason you don't like that.
We'll talk about that later.
Actually, really, really don't like that because they should be paying attention and watching the radar so they wouldn't have to do that.
We will talk about that later.
Ho, 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 ho. Uh-oh. Uh-oh. wait. Okay. I'm already hyperventilating. Okay. Yep. All right. Go ahead.
All right. It all happens fast for me.
So now we're rolling down the runway in foggy weather.
Hold on.
Wait a minute. I'm getting Tenerife vibes. Wait a minute. Hold on a second. Sorry.
You're fine. The flight crew acknowledged the takeoff clearance and reported that they were rolling for takeoff.
Okay.
As the aircraft gained speed and neared rotation speed, the aircraft began lifting the nose when suddenly... And without warning, if you know where that's from, thank you very much.
I really like that.
At 8:10 a.m. and 21 seconds, the aircraft impacted hard.
And while still on the runway. Aircraft.
We'll talk about that in a minute. And began descending back toward the ground. However, it drifted slightly to the right, going beyond the threshold of the runway before doing so, before impacting a baggage processing building. And a large explosion had occurred on impact, the airplane breaking up very rapidly. The aircraft was completely destroyed as it impacted a concrete building.
Yeah.
Belly first, the only thing being intact was a larger section of the forward fuselage, including the cockpit. However, the impact was extremely heavy regardless. That forward fuselage came to rest on its side, but that impact was so heavy, it was heavy enough that all 110 on board perished from the impact.
That's horrible.
Yes. Additionally, because of the collapse of the building, as well as the large fire and smoke that was occurring within that said area.
From a fully fueled MD-87?
Yes. There were 4 people in the baggage building that also perished. So... unfortunately, that happened. Now...
A further 4 were burned.
Yes, another 4 were burned and severely injured in that building because of the fire. Now...
I have some clarifying questions.
Well, we have a whole other thing to talk about, right?
Do you want to clarify prior to the other half of the history of flight?
Okay, listen, Linda's. So I have an inkling, as I'm sure everyone else does.
Uh-huh.
They hit another aircraft.
Yes. That's a very good inference.
Clarifying question. Why the f*** was the other aircraft on the runway?
That is a great question.
Why was it probably facing the opposite direction? Now, I don't know that for sure.
No, you don't.
But also, but that man...
We're going to talk about it. I promise you. And I know you're really onto something. But you're going to get way madder later on because... this is a multifaceted mistake.
I'm having like an emotional crisis. I'm trying to figure out statistically. That's not the right word.
Geographically?
No, that's not the right word either. Like,
mathematically?
Yeah, sure.
Geometrically?
Physically.
Physic.
Add adjective or adverb leak.
I can't figure out the word. How the hell did the ATC people not realize there were two goddamn airplanes on the same goddamn runway?
Talk about that later on. You're onto something.
You're onto a lot of things.
You're onto something. Let me get to the other half of this.
Okay.
Because it won't answer your questions, but it will.
Oh, okay.
Make you very mad.
Okay. I, as thy bestie, shall answer thy questions.
Yes. And you, I promise you, it only gets worse.
It always gets worse.
And it gets a lot worse because this really is a multifaceted mistake for a very large set of reasons. Like, and I say that in a very vague sense because I'm trying not to give anything away, but there are some, this does not fall on one person or entity.
No.
For a multitude of very, very glaring reasons. We'll talk about that later.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, maybe they weren't glaring or bright enough.
Huh, you're funny. Let's talk about the other one. Because yes, you already
something with the lights.
You already heavily alluded. You already heavily alluded to the fact that yes, they hit another airplane.
Wait a minute, that's another thing. Sorry, I'm so sorry.
She just threw her cross stitch on the table.
Wait a goddamn minute! Why did no one realize there were lights on? Hold on.
We will.
Hold on.
Talk about that later.
Holy shit.
On.
I didn't even think about that.
I am going to say some things that are going to make you more and more aggressively angry in this second half.
I'm having like an anxiety attack. Okay. Sorry. I'm so sorry.
But I promise you that the things that you will hear in the analysis will make you even more mad than anything I will say right now.
Okay. Okay. I'm sorry. I keep interrupting you. Go ahead.
It's fine.
I'll shut up now.
That was the best outburst ever.
I was like, wait a goddamn minute. Hold on a second.
So.
Yeah, I'm very good at foreshadowing.
The other one. We already alluded heavily to this. Yes, this is a collision.
There's another plane involved.
Like I said, I don't sugarcoat any of that. To be fair, we did tell Miranda that this was a collision before we covered it, which is why.
I knew it was a collision anyway. I'm the one who put it on the schedule.
Yeah, she already knew. So. That's why we're kind of giving this away.
Also,
anyways,
when you call it an airport disaster.
Yeah. I mean, that can mean a multitude of things. There have been other disasters that are not just that. But this is pretty ugly. This one is a Cessna 525A Citation CJ2.
I refer to it as just a Citation.
Yes, or you can call it a CJ2. Citation Jet 2, what it is.
So a smaller aircraft.
Yeah, it's small. It's a jet. It's got like 8 seats in the passenger cabin. And, you know, it's a private jet. So it's a private jet configuration and then 2 cockpit seats. However, the CJ2, fun fact, is the largest aircraft that you can usually fly as a single pilot around the world, depending on the country and the regulations. Here in the U.S., it is the largest aircraft you can fly as a single pilot.
Still doesn't give me warm fuzzies.
No, but there is 2 crew on this airplane. We'll talk about that. This one had the tail number Delta-India Echo Victor X-Ray. This is a German-registered aircraft.
Deutschland.
Deutsche.
Yes. The CJ2, it has a T-tail. And it has 2 rear-mounted engines, but this is a private jet, and it's quite on the small side. I won't lie. Like, decent airplane, don't get me wrong. It's quite the airplane, and over the years, it's been one of the more affordable, and I hate to say that because it's not. But in terms of its class of jet, it is quite affordable and always has been.
In terms of airplane.
Yeah, and it's been extremely popular over the decades. They still make them, which is crazy. But they were popular even, you know, in the 90s. So, that said, this is a private jet. And it was going on a flight from Milan-Linate to Le Bourget in Paris, France. Le Bourget is where the Paris Air Show is held.
Oh, I thought it sounded familiar.
Yes, that is where the Paris Air Show is held, one of the largest air shows on the planet. And Le Bourget, the rest of the year, is just basically the business jet and the GA airport for Paris,
yeah.
Because it's relatively close to the center of Paris.
Much like Centennial.
Yes. So it's popular. It's also quite old.
Everything is old.
Yes.
Anything in Europe is old.
Yes. The captain was Horst Koningsmann. He was also 36 years old, like the other 2 crew. He had about 5,000 hours total, of which about 2,400 were on the CJ2. The first officer was Martin Schneider, who was 64 years old.
Holy crap.
And had 12,000 hours. So who's the most out of all four of these crew is the first officer on the CJ2. We'll talk about that later on. Well, not really, but this is the person that I believe owns the airplane, because I think they said the owner of the airplane was one of the people on board, and I know who the two people are in the rear are, and they were not. This was not one of those. The owner was not one of those two.
Okay.
So, anyways, the first officer, yeah, 64, had 12,000 hours total, 2,000 hours on the CJ2. The Citation had arrived at the airport from Köln in Germany.
Okay.
Where it was based. And it had done so that morning.
Registered to H. Enschmann.
I have no idea. Was it or is it?
What it was.
Okay.
The Citation Jet 2.
I don't know. People put them under LLCs and things, so you'll never really be able to figure
That's
it out.
That's a name. H is the initial of the first name, and Enschmann.
Don't know.
Okay.
Could be one of the people in the rear, I guess, but I know who the two people in the rear are. We'll talk about that in just a second. So this airplane had come from Germany that morning.
Okay.
It had flown in from Germany that morning and had arrived at 6:59 a.m. and 34 seconds. It had landed. The aircraft then had taxied onto the west apron at Linate. This was basically somewhat of a marketing flight, we'll put it that way, which is pertinent later. Because the two people that were in the rear, so there's two people in the cockpit, okay, and then there's two people seated in the rear, two passengers,
okay,
continuing on to Le Bourget, all of them. Those two passengers in the rear, one of them was a representative from Cessna.
Oops.
And the other one was a prospective buyer for a Citation jet.
Oops.
So you can kind of presume that they were showing off a Citation jet by flying it about Europe for the day.
Oops.
To some popular locations.
Ew. There are no warm, fuzzy feelings.
This happens. This is very common, to be honest, in the GA world. If you're going to sell an airplane.
Okay, but imagine going and, like, prospectively looking at an airplane and then dying in it.
Yes. I mean, yes.
They should have flew to Rome.
Well, you have. I mean, it doesn't really matter where they went, but yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
it does.
Yeah, it does.
Wrong place. Yes, they were in the wrong place at the wrong time. So, we'll get there. 7:58 a.m. and 23 seconds. So, now we're overlapping times. The crew of the Citation contacted the ground controller to request engine start clearance. Mind you, they're sitting on the west ramp. The other aircraft had been on the north ramp, which is on the opposite side of the runway. Both of these are on opposite sides of the runway.
Okay.
However, and somewhere in here is a map of the airport, but there's a taxiway that goes around from the west apron around to the north apron without crossing the runway. Then there's a series of taxiways down the east side of the runway, which runs north to south because it's 360, runway 36. So
okay.
If you look at this on a map, it'll make a little more sense. Just know that they're on the west apron. The other airplane had been on the north apron. Both are aiming to depart.
Okay.
So the crew of the Citation contacted the ground controller and requested engine start clearance. The ground controller cleared the flight to start engines and informed the crew that they had a takeoff slot time of 8:19 a.m. local time, which was about 20 minutes later. So still quite some time.
What was the time for the other flight?
8:16.
Yeah, 3 minutes before this one was supposed to take off.
Okay.
It took off, however, at 6:10, which was 6 minutes before its slot.
The other flight?
Yeah.
Okay.
The SAS flight.
Yeah, but then this plane still should not have been on the runway.
We're getting there. It's been a little bit of time. 8:05 a.m. and 44 seconds, the ground controller instructed the flight, the Citation jet, to taxi north via Romeo 5 and gave them the barometric pressure and stated, quote, call me back at the stop bar of the main runway extension, end quote. If that's confusing to you.
Good.
Good.
Of what runway?
Uh-huh.
We're getting there.
The main runway.
What number?
Uh-huh.
We'll get there.
Because it has two.
You've caught a red flag. Okay. The pilot acknowledged this by stating, quote, Roger, via Romeo 5 and 1013, that being the barometric pressure, and call you back before reaching main runway, end quote.
Okay, how many runways does this airport have?
Two. Technically one, but there was two at the time. There's one big usable runway, and the other one is not used by anybody.
It's about a third of the length of the
it's
other one.
It's very short.
Okay, so main runway is big runway.
Yes.
Okay.
Which, to this day, that's the same runway that they have, and it's the only one they have now. There's,
okay.
It was, because it used to be 3-6 right, 3-6 left, but now it's just 3-6.
But each runway has two ways, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like this one, you can go off one way or the other way?
Yeah, 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 that doesn't matter. Yes.
So they didn't tell them which side is my point.
If we show you on a map why that actually doesn't matter.
Which side they go off of?
Well, what he's trying to tell them to report is basically reaching the runway.
Right.
With the diagram.
Nope, don't show her that one.
Okay.
I got a marginally.
If you want to show the Google map, it still looks basically the same. Kind of.
So.
It doesn't. But.
So, ma'am. So this is the north apron. That's the main for commercial flights. Mm-hmm. That's the SAS flight wing. Whoop. This is the west apron. This is the GA apron. And they were told to take Romeo 5 until they're approaching the stop bar for the extension of runway 36 right. So like there.
Yeah. So they're on the opposite side of the runway from the other flight. That's my point.
Something very key has happened though.
It wouldn't matter if they took off at appropriate times. If they went opposite directions. I still don't like it.
They're, well, but so
they're not
this
aiming.
Taxiway doesn't get to there. There's no taxiway there.
That taxiway doesn't enter the runway.
Okay.
That they've been told, that they've been instructed to go to.
I don't know. How did they get on the runway?
We're going to talk about that in just a minute.
How? Okay. Okay. Okay.
So they're told to taxi on Romeo 5 to the runway extension hold point. That is a very clear distinction. And something key has just happened.
The runway extension hold point.
Right. I will restate what the pilot said. The pilot acknowledged by stating, quote, Roger, via Romeo 5 and 1013, and call you back before reaching the main runway, end quote.
But not the extension, just the main runway.
You caught it. As the aircraft taxied out of the west apron and followed a taxiway toward the runway, 8:08 a.m. and 23 seconds. The aircraft made an unsolicited position report to the tower stating, quote, approaching Sierra 4, end quote. Just out of nowhere, just told the ground controller that they were approaching Sierra 4.
Taxiway Sierra 4?
We'll talk about that. It's a point.
Okay.
The ground controller asked the flight to confirm their position, and the flight crew stated, quote, approaching the runway, .. Sierra 4, end quote. 8:08 a.m. and 36 seconds, the ground controller instructed, quote, Roger, maintain the stop bar. I'll call you back, end quote. And the pilot answered, quote, Roger, hold position, end quote. As the aircraft taxied over the main apron, being where they were.
The west apron.
Yes, and then down onto a taxiway. The ground controller instructed the flight, quote, continue your taxi on the main apron, follow the alpha line, end quote, being one of the taxi lines. The pilot answered, quote, Roger, continue the taxi in main apron alpha line, end quote. We'll talk about that later on, because that should have been a clue for the crew of that flight, but there's another key problem with that.
I'm also just very confused.
You should be, because they were too.
Also, quick question.
Mm-hmm.
Do they have a transponder?
They do.
Is the tower not following them on
nope.
the...
Nope.
Stick a needle in it.
Stick a needle in it.
So, there's tower doesn't... They don't know where they are, and the tower doesn't know where they are. Yeah?
They're on control with ground control right now.
Yeah.
Not tower.
Yeah.
Okay.
But still,
ground but they don't know where they are.
Right.
Moving on.
Okay.
The controller responded, quote, that is correct, and please call me back entering the main taxiway, end quote. The pilot responded, quote, I'll call you on the main taxiway, end quote. Another key thing.
Yeah, you don't like that, do you?
No!
Good.
Never, ever did they say that was the controller's fault. That they f***ed up. They f***ed up. That was big.
Yes.
That was big up. Because they originally told them stop bar, and they never got to a stop bar, or at least not when they said anything. And now they were told that they can go on the main taxiway, and now they're on the taxiway, now or on the main runway. Now they're on the main runway. Now I know how they got on the runway.
We're gonna talk about it. When you see the diagram, this will all make a lot more sense. And then there's going to be some other clarifying things that will make this all make a lot more sense.
My guess is they took a wrong turn somewhere, and they got able access to the runway, which is why.
Wrong turn in Albuquerque. Anyways, that's an old Looney Tunes saying from Bugs Bunny.
They are in Albuquerque currently.
Practically. These communications that the Citation jet was having with the ground controller were simultaneous to the conversation or the communication that the SAS flight was having with the tower controller being cleared for takeoff.
And now I start to see the problem.
The aircraft continued taxiing on taxiway Romeo 6. As the aircraft was 180 meters from the runway, the aircraft crossed a stop marking that was marked in white on the asphalt, then crossed a hold line and a set of hold lights. After this, the Citation crossed one last runway hold position, and proceeded toward the runway. The aircraft entered the runway, but just as it did so, it exploded apart into three large sections and burst into flames. The aircraft was quickly consumed by the fire, leaving very little behind. All four on board perished in the accident immediately.
Not immediately.
Well, due to the fire. Basically immediately. After neither controller was able to contact their aircraft for five attempts each, the airport emergency operations were initiated. The SAS aircraft was not seen on radar, so this concerned the tower controller. There was a scramble through the low visibility to determine the accident locations, because obviously they were in two different places now, and locate the two aircraft. Slowly, very slowly, the aircraft were found, but it was all much too late to offer any life-saving assistance. Because, of course, both aircraft were in flames, completely destroyed. And neither accident, the accident entirely was just not survivable, basically. I mean, the survival aspects didn't leave much to the imagination, but the impacts were so heavy on both aircraft that wouldn't have mattered.
I believe it said that some of the folks in the Citation did have evidence of smoke inhalation, meaning that they were alive post-impact.
Probably, but that didn't last long, and I'm sure that they were not in good shape.
Especially given how slow rescue efforts were.
Yes.
Which is weird, because they passed by a fire.
You're correct.
Well,
the other flight did, yes, I know, but
yeah.
There was a emergency personnel on the...
Yes, there were. Parts of both aircraft were collected and moved to a hangar at the airport for investigation. We'll also talk about that. The airport's emergency response was severely lacking, and it showed, as there was a severe lack of communication, as well as actually over-communication, coordination, proper rescue operations, and a lot of scrambling about, which wasted a lot of time. One of the things, which is in the findings somewhere, but they found that the tower controller was making far too many phone calls during this period of time.
He was making phone productive calls.
Well, he was calling all the different parts of the rescue operation and airfield operation, and they kept making all these different phone calls trying to clarify locations and what was happening and was there fire and yada, yada, yada. And there was no proper coordination. There was this over-communication to a detrimental extent, but there's also a lack of communication because there was a lack of coordination because, again, we'll talk about this later on, but the emergency response program for the airport was really bad.
Garbage.
Really, 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 really bad. It hadn't been maintained in decades. So okay. They had fire crews, but that was it. So everybody perished on both aircraft and four on the ground in the building, and others were injured.
This investigation was performed by the Agencia Nazionale per la Sicurezza del Volo, otherwise known as the ANSV, with the assistance of the Danish AAIB, German BFU, Norwegian HSLB, Swedish SHK, and the NTSB.
Yep,
That being said, investigators were not immediately granted access to the wreckage site because in Italy, at least at the time, not sure of now, would initially conduct such investigations as criminal investigations first. So the local law enforcement had first dibs.
That sounds like something Italy would do.
By the time investigators were given access to the site, local Leos had moved the wreckage to a helicopter pad, which made finding things like the CVR a lot harder. The FDR was taken to German BFU headquarters for analysis fairly quickly, but the CVR took 10 days to be found in the debris.
Yep.
And was also sent to the BFU headquarters for readout. But most of the evidence demonstrating what happened was found before they had access to the CVR.
On which flight?
The SAS.
Okay. Yeah, the Citation didn't have any recording equipment.
No.
Okay.
And to this day, they're not usually equipped with that. There are now, like, forms of that in modern avionics of, like, digital.
Yeah, like, it's part of the multifunctional display.
Yeah, yeah. But there's no actual FDR or anything like that.
During the wait, investigators conducted interviews with any witnesses, air traffic control, etc. It was at this point they found out exactly how dangerous this airport truly was. Linate Airport was having an average of one runway incursion per week.
Okay, clearly there's something wrong.
Very.
In fact, less than a month prior to the accident, there was an almost identical accident, but it was avoided because it was not foggy.
If this keeps happening, there's something wrong.
There's something very wrong.
There's something systematically wrong.
Yes.
Very, very wrong.
Because that shouldn't be happening once a week, boo-boo.
Nope. So now investigators had to figure out who was not in the right place because it either had to be the SAS flight or the Citation.
¿Por qué no los dos?
It was only one.
It was actually only one.
It was the Citation.
Yes. It was.
Investigators reconstructed the situation using the radio communications and found a whole mess. Within the radio communications, investigators found out that as a whole, radio transmissions were...
bad.
Horrible.
Less than effective.
No, really.
Completely, like, absolutely unclear, and no one knew where they were going.
Many radio transmissions were conducted utilizing either a mixture of Italian and English, or just Italian, which does not conform to the international standard of aviation English.
Because not everybody speaks Italian.
Right.
Then we speak of specifically the ground frequency. We don't often speak of ground controllers, but they are in charge of clearances from pushback to startup to taxiing, etc., and so forth. By listening to a ground controller frequency, you should be able to visualize where all aircraft are around the airport facilities using a labeled airport map, which indicates different taxiways, turnoffs, you know, the works. So investigators are really surprised to hear the ground controller use language such as main runway or main apron, or conversely in Italian, principale. Other phrases such as report the stops, report the bars, or report at the stop bar.
None of that is proper terminology.
Report before crossing main were equally confounding. In reference to the west apron, they often used general aviation or ATA. When referring to the north apron, they used main parking, principale, or main apron. Furthermore, the controllers in general failed to recognize and correct whenever clearance readbacks from pilots were incorrect. In 7 instances, readbacks missed part of their clearance, and in 4 instances, they didn't read back their clearance at all.
I feel like that should be a red flag.
Yeah.
Yes.
That in my brain.
So we hate all that. Definitely lends to some confusion.
Absolutely true.
Big time.
But then investigators got even more confused. On the recording, the Citation reported being at Sierra 4.
See?
But investigators could not find that marking anywhere on the controller maps at all.
See?
It wasn't on the controller.
So investigators decided to do a walk around of the taxiways and their signage. It was at this time that investigators found...
Sorry. I'm trying to get in it. Hold on.
Is it this chart? Is it the one I was going to show?
No. It was at this time that investigators found what a piss poor state all of this was in. On our website, you will find some photos of the signage for navigating to taxiway Romeo 5. Miranda, what do you see?
Where?
Uh-huh.
What?
So the signs are completely obscured by grass. Can't see.
Yep.
Forget if you're in the fog. And then the exits from the west apron to Romeo 5 and Romeo 6 are right next to each other.
And you're kind of just like, huh?
They're painted in yellow, which does not conform to international standards. Can you tell a difference between the 5 and the 6?
I can. But I could see if it was foggy and you couldn't see.
No.
You wouldn't be able to figure that out.
There's no way.
They also found that there were often instances where the taxiway markings that guide you along the taxiway just stop.
Because they didn't get repainted?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you can see that on here too.
Mm-hmm.
Also.
Hate all of that?
On top of that. Not only that. But while you were telling the story, Nick, mm-hmm. you say that the citation ended up on Romeo 6. I'm like,
yeah,
why? And they said that out loud.
I left it in there as just like the one little hint. I was like,
I was going to say something. And then I was like, well, maybe it's too late. But
and they're polar opposite directions.
Yeah. Well, and it didn't trigger anything. The ground controller that was like Romeo 6.
Well, what? They never said Romeo 6. They just were on Romeo 6. They did say they were at Sierra 4. However, that but isn't that was, on the
they
chart.
They never said Romeo 6 go on Romeo 6, though, ever.
Correct.
At any point. Correct. They said Romeo 5.
Correct.
But they took Romeo 6.
Which goes in a totally opposite direction.
About to the midpoint of runway 36 right.
Oh, boy.
Can I show this now?
Yes.
This will help a lot. The green line is the direction the citation was supposed to go. The red line is the direction they went.
Oh, God, they went the opposite way.
Completely.
Oh, no.
When the controller stated to follow the alpha line across the main apron, he was talking about across the north apron, assuming that they had gone across Romeo 5 past the extension, and was telling them to follow the main taxiway line down to the quote-unquote main taxiway, which is the one that the SAS flight took down to the end of the runway.
Where did the Sierra 4 come from again?
Sierra 4.
I'm getting there in this paragraph. Yes. And okay. Thus, investigators discovered that rather than taxi as cleared onto Romeo 5, the citation had taxied onto Romeo 6 and then encountered the unofficial Sierra 4 marking, which along with other Sierra markings had been made in 1996 on the taxiways in anticipation of increased traffic. But then in 1998, the slots were transferred to Milano Malpensa, resulting in a significant reduction of flights by almost half. So the markings remained in place, but were unused and ignored in official documentation.
But they were still painted on the airport.
Yeah, yeah, I can see it on here.
Yeah.
So it was still painted on the airport, so pilots were still using it, but it wasn't official on charts, and the ATC had no idea it was there.
In fact, this had happened.
ATC didn't know it was there?
No, because it was not on official documentation.
Why didn't they question anything when they said, we're at Sierra 4?
Because they didn't have a clue what it was.
So they just went, okay, fine?
And the same thing happened the day before, where a GA flight took Romeo 6 instead of Romeo 5.
And no one was like, that's weird. What the f*** is Sierra 4? Hello?
They're used to their messed up airport, so they do nothing about it.
That's not a solution!
You're correct. But they can't do anything about the airport. Like, these air traffic controllers assume they have no control over what markings the airport has.
But they should know!
They don't.
If there's an unofficial marking about a Sierra 4, even if it was made in 1996.
They don't.
They should know it's there and where it is.
They don't have a clue.
Because then they'd know, oh, you're on the wrong taxiway.
It's not on their chart. So they don't know it. And they don't go out there. They're not allowed out there.
No, that's not what I mean. Like, it should, listen.
You wish.
Listen.
If pilots are saying every day.
It every day. No one decided to be like, hey.
I'm just going to pencil this in real quick.
But also like, hey, there's this thing that pilots keep telling us there is, and we have no idea what the hell it is.
Oh, it's also not the only one. There's Sierra 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7.
Yeah.
If pilots are telling you I'm at this point and you're like, the is that?
Yeah.
What are you talking about? I feel like ask a question. Ask somebody.
Hey, guess what? It gets worse.
It does.
So there was also a distinct lack of directional signage, instructional signage, location signage, and no entry signs, all of which was not compliant with ICAO standards.
Shocker.
The airport was super out of ICAO standards.
When the citation began taxiing, there was no signage from the west apron all the way up until the Cat 2 sign before entering the active runway. Taxiway Romeo 6 ought to have had designators along the taxiway saying Romeo 6 along the taxi route, as well as a runway vacated sign 150 meters from the center line of the runway. None of this was there. Investigators also analyzed what the airport was required to have in Cat 3 conditions, since they were operating in Cat 3 conditions per the ICAO. Equipment required includes runway guard lights, controllable taxiway lights, controllable stop bar lights, runway holding position markings, surface movement radar, and air traffic controllers. Of these six things, guess how many they had and what they were.
Two.
Correct.
One of them was air traffic controllers.
Uh-huh.
And the other one were lights? Question mark.
What did I list that they don't have?
That they don't have?
Mm-hmm. There's a very key one.
Ground radar.
They don't have ground radar.
What?
That's why they had no idea where anybody was. And that's why they needed the SAS flight to ident once they were in the air, because that was the first time they would show up on radar.
Oh my God. This is like Tenerife all over.
It is.
It and Tenerife is a smaller airport.
Yeah.
That has extenuating circumstances.
Right.
This is not extenuating circumstances.
Right.
This is just stupidity.
Also, I did not write this down, but it was in the Mayday episode. There are supposed to be motion sensors that activate in the air traffic control tower, indicating that someone has crossed into an active runway where they're not supposed to be.
And there were no sensors.
The sensors are there.
They don't work.
They didn't work.
They were deactivated due to erroneous signals from service vehicles and animals. They went out there and tried doing it, and nothing activated.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. They had the means.
Technology.
They had the technology and turned it off. Miranda's making a face.
Your face is correct. There's a lot of messed up things here. When you start to understand all of this, you can understand why the citation doesn't take most of the blame, actually.
Listen.
However.
The air traffic, the ground.
Everything. The airport.
The whole. Nothing is right.
However, there's still a lot wrong with what the citation is doing.
Oh, hey, by the way, guys, we have the CVR now. The SAS flight didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah, the SAS flight was fine.
No, because the way that they went around and took off makes sense.
Yeah.
It's the citation that doesn't make sense.
Right.
Although there were some not so great things in the SAS transcription, but that had to do with ATC and not with the SAS flight.
I just wanted to demonstrate this is at Linate today, and this is the runway, the hold short, and the ILS hold short. You can see where they actually are, just so you can see like an actual good demonstration of what that looks like on Google Maps.
So, yeah. That's what I've got.
Let's talk about the citation for a second.
That's it.
He has more. I asked Nick to cover some of the analysis because someone works at an airport and someone works at an airport with safety management systems.
Yes.
Okay, you scared me because I was like, there's no way that's it.
No. So I did want to talk about the citation because they made a lot of mistakes and there's something very key that's very wrong. Because this was a marketing flight, which why that's so important is because there's belief that that may have been pressure on these pilots to continue their journey.
It's like
seemingly not an important journey.
How did they phrase it in that one report?
In the Kobe Bryant crash?
Yeah.
It's like self-induced pressure, basically.
Yeah.
I want to pull up the exact
verbiage.
Yes. Because that's the verbiage I would use in this instance as well. Granted, it was not covered very well in the analysis, which is why I didn't bring it up.
Right. Because there's something very important that happened with the citation.
The pilot's likely self-induced pressure and planned continuation bias.
Continuation bias is part of it, yes. So, one, these crews crossed several stop lines.
Yeah.
Past some flashing lights.
Dude.
Which, by the way, weren't ICAO compliant.
I was going to say something about it, but I was like, there's stop lines. Like, there's multiple.
Yep, they went right past all that onto the runway.
Onto the runway.
So that was,
but they're not lit.
Right. There was no proper taxiway lighting there. It was not correct.
They didn't have taxiway guard lighting either, which is the lighting.
It's normally red or yellow. Here, for example, like in Denver at the major airports, they're alternating yellow lights that are about a foot apart. So they alternate. It's like left side, right side. Like they alternate. Yeah. And it's a line of them on the taxiway to stop you.
Taxiway guard lighting, I don't think they have the border taxiway lighting. They only had it down the center of the taxiway.
Correct. And they also had little flashing lights on the sides of the hold short, but they were not ICAO compliant.
So that list of six things they're supposed to have for Cat 3 operations.
Right.
They did not have runway guard lights, controllable taxiway lights, controllable stop bars, or surface movement radar.
Right. They had no control over the lights either. But here's something really key. The citation arrived with a 200, it was actually a 100 meter ceiling, and had performed a Category 3 ILS approach to this airport, and the conditions had not changed much. Here's something really important. Both the crew and the aircraft were only rated for Category 1.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that detail.
They were never intended to be at this airport. They shouldn't have even been trying to take off. They weren't legally allowed. It was Category 3 conditions, and the airplane had filed a Category 1 instrument flight plan, which was filed with the airport.
By the way, that was not mentioned in the Mayday episode.
No, it was not. But in the, it was filed with the airport as well, and the air traffic controllers also didn't catch that. So they didn't stop them either and say, hey, these conditions are too low for your category. But the crew was also opting to continue their trip, both landing at the airport in bad conditions and trying to take off in bad conditions, which they weren't rated for. This is why I say this is super multifaceted, because the airport pretty much shares as much blame as the actual crew of the Citation.
Oh my God.
You mad, bro?
I cannot believe, one, that the Citation pilots would be stupid enough to perform something like that to land. Okay, you landed.
Somehow.
Some way. You got on the ground, okay. But the fact that they knew they were only supposed to take off in Cat 1 conditions.
Yeah.
And they went, eh, it's fine.
Yeah.
They lost their lives for it.
Yes, they did.
That's horrible.
The whole thing, that whole situation was a mess. It was bad.
I don't care if you're flying the president. Right. You say, you know what? It's too dangerous right now.
It's too damn bad.
It's too damn bad. We're going to wait here for a while.
Yep.
And then we'll take off when the conditions get better.
Right.
You don't just go, okay, this is an important flight. We got to go.
Right.
No.
I mean, the ATIS information that they received before landing was 100 meter ceilings. And the minimum that they were allowed was 500 meter ceilings.
Come on.
They were way below minimums. And they knew it when they landed.
And they just did it anyway. That's just stupid. That's just stupidity.
Which
that's
just
like
shows
stupid
me
stupid for the factor of being stupid.
Well, all that tells me is that there was some pressure, but also they were probably trying to show off because there was a prospective buyer on board.
No, no.
That's literally the same thing as the Kobe Bryant
crash. It is, unfortunately.
That's great and all, but wouldn't you want to make sure that they know that you need to practice safe flying?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you also want them to
live?
To buy an airplane? Yes. Yeah.
That got dark.
Yes.
No, you followed my line. You finished my sentence.
So, all that to say, there's obviously a lot wrong that happened here. Between the air traffic controllers, bad communication, the really bad markings
garbage
at the airport.
Garbage communication.
Yeah. Bad markings at the airport. Really bad charts, by the way, for this airport. All around. The Jeppesen charts were horrible. They were not accurate.
I mean, they weren't ICAO compliant, so why would the charts be good?
Right.
Weird.
Yeah. Nothing was ICAO compliant at the airport, basically. That's not entirely true, but a
I
lot of
I guess we
was
should
not
have put a Miranda rage warning somewhere.
Yeah, this one was pretty
I'll
bad.
Put it in the post.
That's fine. Yeah, you might see why also they had a very large finding section. I mean, it's probably like 80 findings or something like that.
How could you even be able to be like, where do you start?
Right.
Where do you, with something that's this f***ed up, where do you start?
That's also a problem I had when I was writing this, because I was like, well, I have where the Mayday episode was and I have what the analysis did, and I don't like either of them.
Nope.
My storytelling brain, of which I don't have much of, didn't like it. So I concatenated them.
Sure.
That's not the word I was looking for, but that's the term I used in Excel today, so.
On top of that, of course, this accident was made significantly worse by the fact that this airport had an unbelievably unmaintained emergency response plan.
Which Nick and knows nothing about.
Oh, yeah,
I know.
Can of worms.
I know a lot about it. I am emergency response trained. And I'm responsible for my emergency response plan.
For your airline.
In 3 stations. So I have to make sure that I know a lot about this. So that being said, the airports, so airlines have theirs for each station. And they have everything about it.
Or airport. Or aerodrome.
Yes. The airport also has their own emergency response plan. So the airport will also initiate a set of... The airport will also initiate a set of procedures and such about the emergency on their own. And they have their own set of procedures that they have to do that relates, of course, to the firefighters and the ambulances and the airfield ops and what have you, everything. And theirs was so poor, they basically determined that this actually caused a problem because they were not trained either. Because there was a lack of emergency response plan, there was nothing to train to, right? Or practice, which is also against the ICAO, by the way.
Shocker.
Super against the ICAO. Yeah. And because of that, the rescue crews and the first responders were all untrained on how to actually respond to an emergency at the airport, which meant that they also started moving the wreckage.
Which you shouldn't do.
Which investigators found out was a problem because they said that there's some stuff that actually was messed with that probably would have been useful and helpful in the investigation. And it was all moved already. Or taken apart. Or
I feel like any good investigator knows.
Don't touch it.
At any
don't touch.
Crime scene, when anything happens,
don't touch.
You leave it.
Don't touch.
You photograph it, you leave it.
Everything you is
investigate
frozen.
It.
Obviously, like, if you are a rescuer, you have to do what you do to save life and put out fire and things like that. But
you don't take pieces of wreckage
but
off
then don't
the ground.
Go over there and manhandle things that are unrelated. Like, just don't touch it. Just don't touch. Freeze it. Don't touch it. Wherever it ends up, it ends up. Investigators got to look at that first before you move everything to a location with the investigator's guidance.
That would have helped them figure out path.
Yeah.
And they didn't have that. They figured it out eventually. By the way, also, something the Mayday episode thought was spectacular for some reason was the SAS crew kind of almost sort of became airborne. Like, truly airborne.
They were close. Well,
they were airborne for 9 seconds.
Yes.
The only reason that they couldn't continue was because of debris in the left engine. Right engine was dead.
Yeah.
But they almost could have maybe salvaged something.
Yeah.
They tried real
Unfortunately,
hard.
Unfortunately, that is true, but it just didn't have enough power. It just didn't. And they fell back down to the ground. Well, a building. There are pictures of all that in the report, by the way. The citation is nothing, nothing but
it's
a black mark.
Completely destroyed.
Nothing but a black mark. And then the fuselage, the only remaining piece, you can see it on the crushed concrete roof. And that's about it. So we'll take a break and we'll come back with all the normal stuff in the second half.
Yep.
Break to break.
It is several days later.
Guys, this happened to us so much.
We're sorry.
We're adults with full-time jobs and someone's job.
Hey.
Was really inconvenient the other night.
Yeah, it was. It happens.
To be fair, someone screwed up real bad.
Yeah, they really did.
Real bad.
Anyway.
Second half. Where are we? Back on track. We're here.
Can we do a review for those of us like me who...
Yeah. So
I mean, you guys just heard the
first half. Tenerife 2.0.
Got it.
Yeah, MD-87 taking off. Everything normal. Citation totally not normal. Way out of place.
On the runway.
It's a bad time.
Totally in the wrong place.
Yeah, got it. I remember now.
Okay, cool. So there are findings, there are causes, and there are recommendations as per the huge. And actually, there's a lot of all of those. So we're going to do the best we can to not do all of those.
Oh my God, is this the longest cause ever?
Maybe. Yes. So for the findings, I'm not doing all of them, but I am doing some. They're in sections, and this happens every once in a while, so... Preface to this section is operational conditions prior to the accident. They found that no effective performance agreements existed between involved organizations regarding safety matters.
Yeah, there's no safety management system.
There's that. There's no basically plan and coordination between all the organizations involved in emergency planning at the local level.
Is this the big international... airport in Milan?
No, this is the smaller one. It used to be one of the big ones. I can tell you from working in the industry and this being one of my primary responsibilities for my airline in my stations, my airports, is that there is a lot of coordination that happens between all of the organizations these days, between the airports, between fire, between police, between the local medical professionals and chapters and like the transportation districts and everything. I mean, anything you can think of that could be possibly involved, they coordinate. They really do. And we have regular meetings and tabletops and exercises to coordinate and know what's going to happen should something happen. Knocking on wood, because, yeah.
It's been a while since, this was a while ago, but like the United flight that had to abandon on the runway.
Yeah.
I don't remember why. Maybe a landing gear issue. I don't know.
Yeah, they collapsed the landing gear.
Yeah, and it was just sitting on the runway. Yeah, there's no way for it to go.
That one, they didn't activate the full emergency response because it wasn't worth it. They just ended up taking all the passengers off normally, and then it took a long time to get the airplane out.
You should know what to do,
yes,
though.
Oh, of course.
Like, if the plane caught fire.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
You know, the collapsed landing gear went into, I don't know,
a fuel tank.
Yeah.
Yeah, as they like to do.
As they are wont to do.
Yes. They found that no functional safety management system was in operation, specifically the SMS in this case.
Yeah, that literally doesn't fly anymore.
No. Although it is amazing how many organizations are still getting caught up on having SMSs. The airlines all have them because they have to. But airports, for example, in the U.S., like big ones, are just getting around to starting to have their own.
Are we talking about a specific airport you may or may not have been at the past month or so?
Yeah, and I've been helping them in.
Do they seriously not have one?
They do now, but none of the major airports do. They don't have their own.
Do we?
No, we do now. That's what you're asking. Denver?
Denver has an SMS.
They do now. I've been helping them put it together.
Oh. Good job.
Me and all the other, well, not all the other airlines, but the ones that choose to participate. And there's quite a few of them. They all, by law, have to have them by, like, I don't know if it's the end of this year or the end of next year or something like that. It's a whole long process. They have to be fully implemented by, like, 2030.
Okay.
I don't think that makes me feel much better, but...
Well, to be fair, like, an airport SMS does something completely different than, like, what ours do, right?
Yes. Ours being the airline.
Yes.
But... this is a circumstance in which the airport was at fault for a disaster.
Yes.
Due to a lack of SMS.
Correct. They have other checks and balances beyond an SMS, though, that could have fixed problems like this that exist at most airports. Okay. So, like, all the U.S. airports, like, there are checks and balances that make sure that, like, signage is correct and charts are correct.
And lights are
and
working.
And lights work and are correct.
Like, and are controllable.
Right. There's a whole different set of, like, systems and checks and balances for those things that already has existed for forever.
Thank you.
To make sure that kind of stuff is already there.
Who is, like, here? The FAA is.
Who is here? We are.
Yeah,
the FAA. Oh, yeah, we're in charge of checking that. No, the FAA is in charge of checking that here.
That's part of it. That airport operations.
So who's in charge of doing it in Italy?
The ANSV.
That's
their
equivalent of the NTSB, though.
Yes, and they're the ones, we'll talk about that in the recommendations. But they also wanted all applicable authorities, so that being the EASA.
Yes, the E.
As well as.
ENAC.
That.
The Italian Civil Aviation Authority.
Right.
They have one separate from the EASA?
Yeah, and most countries do still.
Oh.
The EASA is like the larger governing body, but all the countries also have their own minor body to coordinate local things.
ENAC didn't exist at the time of this act. Wait.
Right.
Well, just kidding. It barely existed.
Yeah. Correct.
This happened in 01, yeah?
And ENAC was established in 97.
And it mentions it in the first finding, which I didn't even say, but it just barely mentions it because it was new.
I'm older than ENAC.
Yeah.
We're older than ENAC.
You're all older than ENAC.
Ew. Don't you.
Anyways.
Very ew.
Very ew. They found that the aerodrome standard did not comply with ICAO Annex 14, so the airport was literally not in compliance
with the world?
With the world's civil aviation organization. They found that no current training program for air traffic controller personnel had been provided.
What?
And then you wonder why they didn't use proper, like,
verbiage
or anything.
That makes so much sense.
Like, you walk, you breathe, you talk, cool. Come on in.
No. No.
We'll show you the ropes. Barely.
And no wonder they had so many potential issues. Like, the fact that this happened, right, but it almost happened... almost
numerous
exactly like
times.
That.
Yep.
Yeah, like, that's crazy.
And I can tell you from the way that they were talking about things, literally, it's like, let me show you the ropes. Walk in. Here they are. Have
Here's
fun.
Here's a rope.
Yeah, here they are. Have fun. I showed them to you. Now you figure
like,
it out.
In charge of people's lives.
Yeah.
Like, that's not something I would be okay with someone just being like, here you go.
No. No.
Without, like, training.
No.
Or something.
Right.
Yikes.
They found that no aerodrome operations manual was established. So the airport literally didn't have an operations manual either, which means they didn't have any standard way of handling airplanes at all in and out of the station, on the ground, taxiing, procedures in and out. Like, they just didn't have any of that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, though.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah.
That checks out.
It just was, and they just were.
Yeah. That's a great way to put that. Uh-huh.
Best way I can think of. They found that the punitive environment that existed and the fear of sanctions discouraged the self-reporting of incidents and individual mistakes at the airport. That's what? Always a bad thing.
Okay, so listen, whistleblowers are protected now.
The next section is before collision impact findings. They found that the flight plan faxed by the Cessna crew to the air traffic reporting office at Köln, Germany, and forwarded to all pertinent offices, reported that the qualifications of the crew was limited to ILS Category 1 approaches, a minimum visibility of 550 meters, was required.
Yeah, we talked about that. They weren't even
supposed to be at
this airport.
Uh-uh. By the way, did we used to fax flight plans?
Uh-huh. They still are on occasion.
Welcome to 2001.
Woo! They found that the Cessna flight was filed as a private flight, but according to documented evidence, it had to be considered as of commercial nature. What that actually means, to clarify a little bit, the flight being commercial means that it was for a hired and paid purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Be it that this was basically a demonstrating flight.
Yes, it's commercial.
It's commercial.
The pilot's getting paid.
But the flight wasn't filed as such or being flown as such.
Why am I not surprised?
Right.
People trying to find a loophole.
Mm-hmm. They found that at 4:59, which is actually 6:59 a.m., nearly 1 hour before the accident, the Cessna landed at Milano Linate Airport while the following weather conditions were reported. Wind calm, visibility 100 meters, fog, ceiling at 100 meters, RVR 175, 200, 225 meters. We've talked about RVR a long time ago. Doesn't matter here. During the approach, the crew was not notified of the instrument landing type of operations in progress, but the current weather conditions warranted ILS Category 3 operations to be implemented.
Right.
They found that up to 524 hours, the ATIS of Milano Linate did not state that the ILS Category 3 operations were in progress, while existing weather conditions warranted their implementation. So, as much as they bash the pilots of the Cessna, they're also saying, hey, the airport didn't say they were under ILS mm-hmm. Category 3 operations when they were, and they should be.
Can we rewind real quick? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
The EASA didn't exist either.
Cool.
At the time of this accident.
Cool.
They were formed in 2002.
Yeah.
When the European Union was formed.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
It make it a sense.
Whoop.
That checks out.
So, forgive our American education.
Yeah.
Bro.
I can't know everything all the time.
So, the ENAC is considered a current EASA member state. Is how that is organized.
Makes sense. They found that the pilots of the Cessna were not qualified and certified to land in such weather conditions as were actually present at the airport.
Yeah, we talked about that. They shouldn't have even been there.
They found that the nature of the flight may have exerted a certain pressure on the Cessna crew to commence the flight despite the prevailing weather conditions. So again, that's the pressure and continuation bias to some extent, but it's more the internal and external pressures. They found that the AIP Italy published information was found not consistent with the current, at the time of the accident, Milano Linate airport layout. So the charts that were published didn't even represent the actual airport properly.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's cool. They also found that the Jeppesen and AIP Italy documentation were not consistent with the airport layout. In addition, Jeppesen charts deviated from the published AIP Italy as follows. The airport diagram 20-9 did not label the fire station. Parking chart 20-9B contained an A denoting a segment of the northern end of the main taxiway, and chart 20-9A did not contain a notation that aircraft on taxiway Romeo 5 must request and obtain specific air traffic controller clearance to cross the runway 36 right extension. All those things are really important things. Some of those are very critical, actually. But they're stating out loud, like Jeppesen, the all-controlling company that does charts for the whole world, all the airports around the world, wasn't even right. They didn't get it right. They weren't provided correct information, probably, to be fair. But they didn't get it right. Shock.
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 Amusement. Shock.
They found that the SAS flight support documentation was also found not consistent with the airport layout. Similarly to the AIP Italy, in addition, it further differed partially from the latter published information in that the parking chart showed Taxiway Romeo 6 in a different position than the official maps.
Oh, Lord.
And the aerodrome chart did not report the position of the fire station building, nor its denomination. At the north apron, the chart showed taxi lines, Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, and Delta, which were not reported on the official maps. Literally, it didn't even have taxiways in the right place on the charts. And then you wonder how the air traffic controllers end up saying the main taxiway, which is totally not Bro-ski. Proper.
Oh, my God.
Oh, Lordy.
This you know could how have been fixed, too.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And no one...
This was so no avoidable. Checked. This was so preventable.
Whoever was in charge of the airport.
Nope.
Didn't care.
Well, didn't and care it cost people their lives.
Yes.
That's how people get sued.
Yes. They found that the west apron markings were not in conformity with ICAO recommendations and were further found to be insufficient. Literally, just the markings on the ground were also just...
Shocked.
Horrible. Yeah, shocked.
Again, there's photos on our website
to
see how
horrible.
Terrible.
They are.
Absolutely atrocious.
They found in total deviation from ICAA recommendations, the West Apron missed signage altogether.
What?
Wow.
Crazy.
At this point, none of this is shocking. They found that Taxiway Romeo 6 lacked markings, pavement surface markings to reinforce messages to flight crew, and signs and those present were found to deviate from ICAO recommendations. Shocked.
What? Crazy.
They found that ASMI radar was reportedly out of service since November 29th of 1999.
Bro, get it fixed.
Yeah.
Get it fixed.
That would be their surface radar, by the way.
Yeah, I figured that one out.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely just didn't care.
Nope.
About people's safety at
Not
all.
At all. Not at all. They found that installed equipment for prevention of runway incursions positioned at Taxiway Romeo 6 intersection with runway 18 left, 36 right, had been deactivated for several years. That would be the thing that sounds in the air traffic control.
The thing that was silenced due to cabin. Erroneous alarms. Yes.
Probably because like bunnies and things would run through it.
Bunners.
But
also,
listen.
So would airplanes, it turns out.
Yeah. So like what happens when you don't have ground radar and you don't have anything to tell you that something's on the runway?
I also want to know if a bunny is running out on the runway.
I mean, yes.
Don't run over the bunny.
Or the bear if you're in Alaska.
Yeah.
Or
that is the thing.
A moose?
Gator.
Yep. If you're in Florida.
What is Italy known for?
Bugs.
Big bugs. They found that white flashing lights positioned at Taxiway Romeo 6 intersections with runway 18 left, 36 right, described on AIP Italy official charts, white alternate flashing light indicators, had been deactivated in 1992 and substituted by unidirectional alternate green-yellow code color lead-on-in lights. I know that's really confusing. Lead lights to guide exit from runway 36 right and entrance to Taxiway Romeo 6, while the green taxiway lights exiting from Taxiway Romeo 6 toward runway 18 left, 36 right, were not affected by this implementation and remained unchanged. Official documentation showed none of these changes. So all the changes that they made to the lighting, deactivating the old lighting for the entrance to the runway in 1992, almost 10 years prior, they didn't mention that, or the fact that they added new lighting that is different colors on different sides of these things. If you've ever seen these, they're what taxiway lights look like. The ones that are actually on the concrete down the center line, for example,
are green.
Typically, yes. But they can be white in certain circumstances or blue. But
I've seen both blue and green. I don't know if I've seen white, but
yeah, green is typical. White happens. And what they're saying here is white is for the exiting of the runway side and green is for the entrance side.
Got it.
And these things are inset in the ground and they're metal. And then they have angled lights that point upward out of them. And one side points toward the runway side, and one side points toward the taxiway side, and they're different colors.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
If you look up a taxiway centerline light, you'll understand exactly what I'm saying. They had them, but this changed, and they didn't note that, so it's on none of the charts.
Oh.
Yeah, it's cool. It's real cool.
I think we have different definitions of cool, but...
No, we don't. That's the fun part. No, we don't. I'm being sarcastic. Mm-hmm. They found that the ground controller had no possibility to switch on and off the light crossbars on Taxiway Romeo 5 and Romeo 6 and could not select taxiway centerline lights in coherence with taxi instructions. Just literally had no control over the lights.
And that was one of the things that is required for Cat 3 operating conditions.
Yes, it is. Yes, indeed.
Not just that there be lights, but that they be controllable.
Yep, for good reason. They found that the phraseology widely used by controllers and pilots was not in conformity with ICAO recommended practices.
Was absolute trash.
Radio telephony
That's a
telephony.
Word. Yes. Okay. Communications was conducted alternating Italian and English language. Again, bad practice by the ICAO. They found that the air traffic controllers have not consistently enforced the prescribed readback procedure, meaning they read out an instruction and the crews are supposed to read back to them.
And they didn't correct them when they didn't do that.
Right, which was a regular problem.
It was constant.
Yep.
The day of, I think it was in my notes, it was like 7 instances of each.
They found that before entering the runway, the Cessna crossed a white stop marking, an ICAO type B holding position marking, a bar of red lights, an ICAO type A holding marking, and then he followed the green taxiway center lights without any further radio communication. Thus, entering the runway, right? He found that the Cessna entered the runway without receiving the prescribed clearance because also he wasn't in the right place. They found that about the same time, the MD-87 was cleared for takeoff. What a surprise. What a shock.
And then they hit each other.
Right. So now let's talk about the impact portion. We found that after impact, the tower controller, frequency 118.1, called 5 times to the SAS flight without receiving an answer. We found that after impact, the ground controller called 8 times to the Cessna without receiving an answer. We found that the emergency alarm issued by the tower was activated while the first 2 fire squads were already on their way. Good job. Behind the curve. But great. Good going.
Good job.
They found that during the early stages of the emergency, the tower received too many unnecessary phone calls. They found that the AEP had not been updated and has not been implemented or adhered to coherently, that being the airport's emergency plan, these days called the Emergency Response Plan, the ERP. They found that the removal of part of the wreckage before arrival of the investigator in charge and completion of the important on-site investigation resulted in loss of factual information useful to the investigation. That's an important thing, too. I mean, even this being a technically quote-unquote secured crash scene because it was entirely at an airport, even though one of them was a baggage building, it was still at the airport. They should have been able to control it, but it was handled poorly because the response was terrible because there was no plan.
What?
And that's all I've got for findings.
Okay, everyone buckle up.
Buckled up.
Fasten your seatbelts.
Sufficiently buckled.
Yes.
After analysis of evidence available and information gathered, it can be assumed that the immediate cause for the accident had been the runway incursion and the active runway by the Cessna. The obvious consideration is that the human factor related action of the Cessna crew during low visibility conditions must be weighted against the scenario that allowed the course of events that led to the fatal collision. Equally, it can be stated that the system in place at Milano Linate Airport was not geared to trap misunderstandings, let alone inadequate procedures, blatant human errors, and faulty airport layout.
The verbiage is fun.
The following list highlights immediate and systemic causes that led to the accident. The visibility was low, between 50 and 100 meters. Traffic volume was high. The lack of adequate visual aids. The Cessna crew used the wrong taxiway and entered the runway without specific clearance. The failure to check the Cessna crew qualification. The nature of the flight might have exerted a certain pressure on the Cessna crew to commence the flight despite the prevailing weather conditions. The Cessna crew was not aided properly with correct publications, lights, markings, and signs to enhance their situational awareness.
Ah, really?
Official documentation failing to report the presence of unpublished markings that were unknown to air traffic controllers, thus preventing the ETC controller from interpreting the unambiguous information from the Cessna crew, a position report mentioning Sierra 4. Operational procedures allowing high traffic volume in weather conditions as were current the day of the accident and in the absence of technical aids. Radio communications were not performed using standard phraseology or were not consistently adhered to. Radio communications were performed in Italian and English language. Air traffic control personnel did not realize that Cessna was on taxiway Romeo 6. The ground controller issued a taxi clearance towards main apron, although the reported position Sierra 4 did not have any meaning to him. Instructions, training, and the prevailing environmental situation prevented the ATC personnel from having full control over aircraft movements on the ground. Furthermore, the Aerodrome standard did not comply with ICAO Annex 14. Required markings, lights, and signs did either not exist or were in dismal order and were hard to recognize, especially under low visibility conditions. Other markings were unknown to operators. No functional safety management system was in operation. The competence, maintenance, and requirements for recent experience for ATC personnel did not fully comply with ICAO Annex 1. The LVO implementation of ENAV did not conform with the requirements provided in the corresponding referenced ICAO document 4976. The combined effect of these factors, contemporaneously present on the 8th of October 2001 at Milano Linate, have neutralized any possible error corrective action and therefore allowed the accident. We could have just read that and called it the episode.
Pretty much. I am going to go through the recommendations, and
I have some recommendations.
So do they. Rightfully so. I'm actually amazed how much time they didn't spend in the recommendations talking about the emergency response, but they didn't spend a lot of time on that. They did spend a lot of time, of course, on the signage and stuff, but we'll get into it. Bear with me, they're a little bit long-winded.
I'm sorry, did you not just hear the causes section?
I'm aware. The ANSV recommends mandate that the ICAO requirements regarding the usage of the English language shall be enforced and that its abidance shall be monitored. It is also felt necessary that standard readback procedures are enforced. Similarly, the ANSV calls for the enforcement by Air Transport Authority, ATA. This would be basically at the beginning of the ENAC. That's why. Of the new ICAO recommended procedure that calls for explicit clearance to be issued when runway crossing are involved and contained explicit mention of the runway denomination of the runway to be engaged. So the runway that you would be crossing. Exceptions should be confined to situations that emanate from a typical domestic-only traffic and or that the usage of the domestic language would facilitate handling of an emergency situation. That, of course, is standard around the world anyways. That's not a surprise. They recommended that the state of the airport visual aids of all domestic airports, as well as the published taxi procedures, shall be checked and found to be in accordance to published AIP, being the charts published by the Italian aviation authorities. All information shall be unequivocal and in conformity with the internationally adopted standards, ICAO Annex 14. Furthermore, such correspondence shall be reflected in operators' documentation, saying that they should standardize all of their airports, making sure that they are standardized.
To the international standard.
Correct. And then that is also communicated on charts properly.
As is the international standard.
Yes.
Because, like, why would you want to be able to read the chart and know what's going on? Weird.
Yep.
That seems like a very unreasonable ask.
Weird.
Weird.
Very weird.
So weird.
Weird. They recommend that procedures shall be adopted to systematically report any incident or abnormal operation in breach of safety. Registration of such events should be monitored by the ENAC with a view to update and enhance the quality of procedures and their compliance by all concerned to achieve and maintain adequate operational safety. This meaning SMS.
Safety Sims. Management Sims. Systems.
We call them Sims.
Safety Management Systems.
Yep.
Wow, it's like they're still recommending that today.
Yeah. Also, yes, it's true.
It's been a while.
It's true. It has.
It's been over 20 years.
Yes. Now, mind you, that's a U.S. thing. There, they probably already did it. Long time ago. Different countries, different systems. They recommended to mandate for increased training and recurrent training for all air traffic controllers necessary to validate individual continuing proficiency for the task required for ATC.
Dear God, I hope so.
No, really. We should maybe train them.
Train ATC?
What?
What?
And then maybe we should also keep up with that and, like, do recurrent training. This one is a bit longer, so bear with me. They recommend the adoption of the model clearly defined in the ICAO Aerodrome Design Manual for the denomination of all elements of the airport movement area. Such model shall allow the implementation of, quote, standard taxi routings, end quote, containing all necessary information to air crews, denomination routing, compulsory stop points, etc. Such model should be adoptable by all airports. The ANSV further recommends that stop bar lights should be controlled by ground controllers, as described in ICAO Annex 14, as is normal. All that to say, they wanted to better standardize Italian airports.
What?
To
Weird.
Follow ICAO requirements.
Wow.
Like they were supposed to do in the first place.
Wow.
Weird. And that they wanted to standardize all of that in a way that was also a way that could be demonstrated on charts and to pilots and to the world. They recommended the National Competent Authority, that being the ENAC.
I would
now,
hope that all
yes,
are competent.
To ensure that the design and operation of all aerodromes are in compliance with the safety standards as specified in ICAO Annex 14. Literally just checking all the airports. That National Competent Authority being the ENAC. They recommended that the National Competent Authority to ensure that all aerodromes in Italy, just bear with me on the, I know, the verbiage is fun. The grammar's perfect because Italian. It reads, ANSV recommends that National Competent Authority, comma, to ensure that all aerodromes in Italy have a functional safety management system, according to ICAO Annex 14.
Okay, you know what? I got the gist, okay?
Yeah, you understand. You recommended that the National Competent Authority to evaluate the need to design the airport emergency plans applicable to all Italian airports in accordance with ICAO Annex 14, paragraph 9.1.12. Provisions and to establish guidelines applicable to all Italian airports, paying a special attention to the following requirements. A, the plan shall cater for an immediate dissemination of all necessary information, aircraft type, dangerous goods, fuel, persons on board, so as to allow correct rescue and firefighting procedures to be followed. B, reference maps shall contain the official denomination of key positions, locations, and made public. C, the plan shall be updated, made public, and verified with periodic limited exercises regarding communication and vehicle movement. Full exercises regarding also fire station crews intervention. They should be conducted without prior notice. Exercises results shall be conducive to implementation of corrective measures when needed. D, fire station crews shall inform duly the tower for the necessary coordination. Yeah, that seems obligatory.
What? E, you mean we need to talk to the tower?
Yes. E, the plan shall make provision for priority radio and telephone links and a mandatory code information flow between control centers of organizations. So the better way to make sure that communication is flowing properly and not over-communicating or under-communicating and not communicating with too many of the wrong people. F, the plan shall require that a specific telephone line will be dedicated to non-operational information flow to avoid overloading essential communication. Somebody else should be on a different phone to take up the calls that are not necessary. G, the plan shall contain guidelines to participating organizations for other important aspects to be taken into account, such as the continuing alertness by all involved, organizational aspects like personnel, shifting times, new recruits, training, etc. All that to say, this is like their one big recommendation that they had about the emergency response plan, which, like I said, they don't really cover too super in-depth, but they cover it, but they covered it all in one recommendation, basically. One big, giant recommendation. And it's all valid, but the requirements for an emergency response plan, as well as coordination and exercises between organizations, goes so much deeper than what they're describing here. They recommended that the National Competent Authority make the following for evaluation. A, tower personnel shall be invited to on-site periodic recognition of existing markings, lightings, and signs of airport maneuver areas. B, the tower airport emergency signal equipment shall be recorded and time-stamped. C, the emergency frequency speaker system shall be positioned so as to be audible from all controllers of the tower control room.
So not all of them could hear it?
The emergency? No.
We're doing real good, guys.
Yeah, it's great. D, to add visual recognition capability, light source, to the ELT activation signal when an emergency locator transmitter goes off at the airport or near the airport. They have a signal for that, and it should work.
Wow.
Just saying.
Weird. It should work.
Yes. They wanted to add a visual version. E, to install the necessary equipment, radio and frequency, to allow tower to monitor firemen service communications when needed. So they have their own frequency, and you can monitor that in the tower. F, the tower shall have immediate access to the necessary information to be made available to rescue personnel prior to their intervention on accident site. That's kind of general, if you ask me. Persons on board, fuel, dangerous goods, things like that. That usually comes from the airline, by the way. So all those things to say, what they're talking about here in specific are recommendations for things that could be auditable, that can be increased for obviously safety and emergency response and things like that, but things that you can check regularly as well. They recommend that the National Competent Authority do the following for evaluation as well. A, in case of accident, the essential information should be shared by the tower and fire station using the dedicated communication equipment provided. B, the fire station control center should have immediately available the necessary information, the number of passengers, fuel, dangerous goods, etc., which again is provided by the airlines these days, to adopt the appropriate intervention technique. C, all communication lines of the fire station shall be recorded and timestamped. This is something that they really got mad about, I think. The fact that they didn't have any recorded communications between, like, the tower and fire, as well as, like, their own internal with fire and rescue.
Yeah, valid.
Sure, fair enough. D, the internal alarm signal for the fire station shall be connected directly to the tower signal. Seems valid. Seems important. Otherwise, what does it do? E, the number of fixed replenishing tanks shall guarantee that many equipment vehicles can be serviced at the same time. I assume that being water for fighting fire.
Fire!
I wonder how that works.
I don't know.
Okay.
The answer to that is I don't know. That is not my specialty. I don't even know anything about that. I'm sure the airports have ways of doing that, and I'm sure that's like entirely left up to the fire.
You should get a guest so we can ask this one random question.
Maybe someday. And the last one I'm doing. The last recommendation, they recommended the National Competent Authority to request all DCA that in low visibility condition operations, the random rate checking of aircraft documental, that's terrible wording, certification and of the licenses and qualifications of the pilots should be increased with the objective of verifying the coherence of such documental check with the actual meteorological conditions. All that to say, really, that one is really poorly worded, but they recommended that they be doing regular checks when a flight plan is filed, that you are verifying the pilots
are qualified ratings, to perform the flight that they are intending,
that the flight plan is filed with the correct ratings, and that the aircraft is also rated for said weather and things, and they should be doing that far more regularly.
What?
I know. I feel like there's still a myriad of other things they really could have done here and recommended, but don't get me wrong, a lot of things changed, and for the better, and of course, Linate's not at all that kind of risk anymore.
Well, and now the EASA exists, which helps.
Yes! Also, yes! So.
International standards.
That's right.
And enforcing international standards.
That's right. And that's it.
All right. I don't even remember what the name of this episode is.
Linate Airport Disaster.
There you go. It's that.
Or SAS 686, if you want to also look that up.
I am going to pitch that you all join Patreon just to listen to this blooper reel.
Oh my God. The second half of this was a trip. What you
so
just,
sorry.
What you just heard, I stitched together by some miracle.
We were laughing.
All the time.
It was like 5 minutes.
We're very slap happy right now.
Yes.
Yeah. So thank you for listening and doing all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And yes, you should check out the Patreon and all the stuff that comes with Patreon. And you should also check out the newsletter, because in the next episode, we will be divulging the answers to the trivia questions.
Yes, that is true.
And you should also be cool.
Yeah.
Are cool. They listen to us.
And like, tell your friends and family about us.
I've been thinking about doing what some of my favorite YouTubers do. And putting together as part of the...
Smash that like button?
No.
Oh.
As part of...
You should do that too, though.
Yes, you should do that too, though. As part of Patreon, creating a WhatsApp group for patrons. And some of them even do tiered versions, where they do like the main chat. And then if you're in like the uppermost tiers, they have a separate, even smaller chat just for them. But that way you can communicate more closely with one another about things. But also like us.
You want to add another group chat to my life?
Dude, I was going to say, we have so many group chats. Listen, if that's something you're interested in, let us know.
Let us know. Before we'd ever do such a thing, like, that's kind of my whole point.
At least,
like,
I guess.
Is that something that would entice some of you?
At least they pay to be in that group chat.
Yeah.
That's true.
Well, that's kind of the point. And it's like, I would
prioritize them over other group chats.
Because I'm already very much used to looking at WhatsApp chats for important reasons. This doesn't change anything for me.
Know that airlines are run off of WhatsApp.
A lot of them are, actually.
Because everybody has a different phone number.
Yeah, and different types of phones and everything. And there's different organizations we have to be able to communicate between. And WhatsApp just does the job. Anyways. If that's something you're interested in, let us know.
Yes, please.
If that would entice you to join, if that would be something that would you could be interested in, just literally throw a comment or something or send us an email or I don't know.
Yeah.
Let us know. I want to gauge some interest in that. Patrons, if you're already a patron... Let us know.
Also, if you have a recommendation, go ahead and email us. It might already be on our list. Be aware, because we're like almost 2 years out now.
Oh
my God.
Yeah. But make sure that you let us, you know, just email us and be like, hey, I haven't seen. Make sure you double check our list, though, because there's been a few people that have been like, hey, can you do this? And I'm like, we did this in episode blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Which clearly means you haven't listened to that point yet, which is fine. But like, double check, like on our website, search the IATA or the ICAO code and the flight number, or even just the name, because it should pop up.
Yeah.
If we already have done it.
And believe me, I get it, because the more episodes we have now, the harder it is to find those things.
Yeah.
Check yourself before you wreck yourself.
That's right.
So thank you so much for listening. We do appreciate it. We hope you have a safe and healthy week, and we will catch you all next week.
Keep your speed up.
Please like and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Hard Landings Podcast and on Twitter at Hard Landings Pod.
Subscribe and leave a 5-star review on the platform you are using to listen.
If you would like to see photos and sources for this episode, please visit us at hardlandingspodcast.com, where you can also leave us feedback and ask questions.
This episode was researched and written by Nick and Christy and edited by the lovely Paige.
Our theme song was written by Miranda and performed by all three of us plus Leo.
And our logo is by Naomi.
Thanks for listening. Catch you next time.